If you have the sermon handouts, you know, I have listed at the very beginning of the handouts all the points I've covered thus far on this series about Phariseeism. And I won't go over those again. But someone asked me recently, how many am I going to do in this series? Well, tonight will be number 5. And I think based upon the information that I've researched so far, I should have 3 more left. I'll do 2 more that will have just various points as I've been doing, as I will do tonight. And then the last one, we'll just take an in-depth look at Matthew 23, where Jesus spends quite a bit of time telling us about the Pharisees. And I think once we have seen all of those things, hopefully we will appreciate why I have titled these lessons, Beware of Becoming a Pharisee. It's a very dangerous thing. For tonight, first of all, the Pharisees wanted signs. They wanted signs. And what was wrong with the Pharisees wanting signs? What was wrong with the Pharisees testing Jesus? And why did Jesus do signs at other times? He did signs for other people or before other people. And in fact, we would not accept just anyone. In truth, in 1 John chapter 4, the Bible even tells us to test the spirits, because we're not supposed to believe just everyone who comes along. John said in 1 John 4:1, excuse me, Beloved, do not believe every spirit. Don't be gullible. Use your mind and think. Be discerning. Beloved, believe not every spirit, but test the spirits, whether they are of God, because many false prophets have gone out into the world. Were the Pharisees just simply doing what John said to do? I realize John wrote this after we see all these passages on the Pharisees, so it's not as though they were obeying him, but were they in spirit doing what he said to do? Listen, brethren, God is not at our disposal to perform miracles whenever we want them done. The Pharisees were not God. God is God. If Jesus was from God, he was greater than the Pharisees. But the Pharisees believed that they were greater than Jesus. Mark chapter 8 shows that the Pharisees were not interested in seeking truth, but they were only interested in refuting Jesus. Listen to Mark 8, 11 and 12. Then the Pharisees came out and began to dispute with him, seeking from him a sign from heaven, testing him. But he sighed deeply in his spirit and said, Why does this generation seek a sign? Assuredly, I say to you, no sign shall be given to this generation. Notice a connection in that first line there of verse 8. That Mark said the Pharisees came out and began to dispute with him, seeking a sign. They did not want to see a sign in order that they might believe. They wanted a sign because they wanted something else to refute. They wanted another reason to disagree with him. They wanted another reason that they could show the crowds, you shouldn't be following this man, he's a false prophet. If he had given them a sign, would they have believed? I don't think so. And I'll show you why in a few moments. Now consider the book just before, Matthew. In Matthew chapter 12, the apostle fills us in more on the Pharisees wanting to seek a sign. Matthew 12:38. Then some of the scribes and Pharisees answered, saying, "Teacher, we want to see a sign from you." This here shows their attitude toward him. And then in the next verse, verse 39, Jesus explained why they were seeking a sign. Listen to what he says. "But he answered and said to them, 'An evil and adulterous generation seeks after a sign, and no sign shall be given to it except the sign of the prophet Jonah.'" So there would be one great sign that he would deliver to the entire generation, and that would be his resurrection. That's the sign of Jonah. But he revealed that their motives were evil and adulterous. Therefore, he would not do a sign for them. Four chapters later, in Matthew chapter 16, Jesus revealed further what their problem was in seeking a sign from him. Matthew 16, beginning of verse 1. "Then the Pharisees and Sadducees came, and testing him, asked that he would show them," now notice this, "a sign from heaven. He answered and said to them, 'When it is evening, you say, it will be fair weather, for the sky is red. And in the morning, it will be foul weather, for the sky is red and threatening.'" Hypocrites! "You know how to discern the face of the sky," and now watch this, "but you cannot discern the signs of the times. A wicked and adulterous generation seeks after a sign, and no sign shall be given to it except the sign of the prophet Jonah. And he left them and departed." Now, did you notice what Jesus did here, and Matthew's comments as well? The Pharisees could discern the signs of the sky, but they could not discern the signs of the times. They could look at the sky, the same sky and the red clouds, as the sun is either rising or setting, and they knew, because of the time of day, what the weather would be like. They knew how to do that. But they did not have the ability to understand the signs of the times. Therefore, they would not understand a sign from heaven. For example, when they saw Jesus earlier casting demons out of people, they did not see it as a sign from heaven, but as a sign from the devil. Remember, they accused him. "He's doing this by the power of Beelzebub." He gave them a sign, a magnificent sign. And this is why Jesus was not willing to do signs at their request. They did not have the willingness and the ability to discern what they were seeing. Think of the signs they missed. Now, I could do a whole sermon on this, or probably a couple of sermons, on all the signs that pointed to Jesus being the Messiah right there in their generation. In fact, there's people who say there's over 300 prophecies in the Old Testament. But let me just mention one. And I've already covered it in a sermon when I went through the book of Daniel. I showed you Daniel chapter 9 and what is known as Daniel's 70 weeks, which is a countdown. That's exactly what Daniel's 70 weeks are. They are a countdown to the arrival of the Messiah. And they are a countdown to His crucifixion. So if they had just gone to Daniel chapter 9, I think it starts at about verse 24, and looked at the signs of the times that Daniel gave, they could see how there was a countdown. Okay, so they're following the countdown, and all of a sudden they realize, you know what, that's our generation. And that's probably right around this year when he should appear. And all of a sudden they hear that some guy is healing the blind, healing the lame, walking on water, turning water into wine, raising the dead. They should have put the two together. Oh, this must be him. There was no one else doing these things, at least not until Jesus gave others that power. Then there were 70 that he sent out who had that power. They should have brought those together. They could not discern the signs of the time. So why should Jesus do a sign from heaven? He had done one before, and they said it was a sign from the devil. So if they missed the signs of Scripture, and if they missed the signs of the miracles that he had already done, then they would have missed or misinterpreted or misunderstood or misrepresented any sign that he would have done for them right there on the spot. Again, that's why Jesus did not do signs for them. All right, secondly, these next 6 points will not be quite as extensive as that first one, but the second one now. The Pharisees were offended by truth. The Pharisees were offended by the things that Jesus taught, yet how many people had they offended? This is what the Pharisaical mind does not understand. They are the ones who do the hurting, not the ones who are hurt. So when someone offends them, they get angry. And in this case, they became so angry with Jesus, they were willing to eliminate him in the worst possible way. Again, in Matthew, if you're still in Matthew, in Matthew chapter 15, Jesus did some teaching, and the disciples saw how the Pharisees responded to it. And here's what happens in Matthew 15, 12. Then his disciples came and said to him, "Do you know that the Pharisees were offended when they heard this saying?" It's interesting that people are so interested in making sure we don't offend the Pharisees, but is anyone as equally concerned that the Pharisees offend people? Matthew 21 shows that they understood how Jesus was applying truth when he taught. Listen to Matthew 21, 45. "Now when the chief priests and Pharisees heard his parables, they perceived that he was speaking of them." And I think that's interesting. They heard truth, and in this case, he was exposing error. And they said, "Oh, he's talking about us," which was really an admission of guilt on their part. Otherwise, they would have said, "Yeah, I hope somebody else heard that." Number three, the Pharisees were envious. In John chapter 4, the Bible shows a key point in what the Pharisees had against Jesus. And this may be one of the strongest things that they had against him. They saw something happening. They were losing something, and Jesus was gaining something. They wanted what he had. And he had popularity. In John chapter 4 and verse 1, John began by saying this, "Therefore, when the Lord knew that the Pharisees had heard that Jesus made and baptized more disciples than John," and then it goes on to explain what Jesus did, how he moved on. Jesus heard, or Jesus knew, I should say, that the Pharisees had heard that he now had a bigger movement than John the Baptist did. And he knew what that meant. That they were envious of him and his popularity. More and more people were following Jesus. Fewer and fewer people were following the Pharisees. And so they saw him as the problem. And what do you do when you have a problem? Well, you remove it. And that's what they were determined to do. We need to remove the problem. The problem is Jesus. Mark 15 reveals that Pilate was perceptive enough to see the motives of the Jewish leaders, who were all primarily, or most of them, were Pharisees, when they handed Jesus over to Pilate for crucifixion. Mark 15:10 says, "For he, Pilate, knew that the chief priests had handed him over because of envy." What is envy? If I envy you, it's because you have something I want. I envy you that you have something. And I wish I had it. They were envious because they were powerless. John 11 shows that it was not only the numbers that they were losing and Jesus was gaining, but they were losing power. And the Pharisees were all about power. They wanted to control people. You don't control them. And so in John 11, 46 and 47, it says, "But some of them went away to the Pharisees and told them the things Jesus did. Then the chief priests and the Pharisees gathered a council and said, 'What shall we do? For this man works many signs.'" Oh, by the way, there's the signs they requested earlier. And are they believing? No. We got to do something about this guy. We need to eliminate him. Number four, the Pharisees trusted in themselves that they were righteous. Now, I've already covered Luke chapter 18 on another point about the Pharisees, but I did not emphasize what I want to emphasize now. I want you to notice as I read this about Jesus telling us of a Pharisee who went up to pray and a tax collector who went up to pray. Notice in whom the Pharisee trusted. Listen to him speak and see where his righteousness lies. Luke 18, beginning verse 9. Excuse me again. "Also, he spoke this parable to some who trusted in themselves that they were righteous and despised others." And here's what Jesus said. "Two men went up to the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. The Pharisee stood and prayed thus with himself." I always thought that was interesting that Jesus worded it like that. He prayed thus with himself. "God, I thank you that I am not like other men, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even as a tax collector. I fast twice a week. I give tithes of all that I possess." Where is his emphasis? At first he does say, you know, "God, I thank you." It sounds like he's starting off well, but then after that, you don't hear about God anymore. That's all about me. And it's all about what a wonderful person I am. To the Pharisee, without realizing it, it was all about him. Now, if you asked him, "Are you doing these things for the glory of God?" I think he would have answered with a resounding yes. Yet his speech, such as in this prayer, and living betrayed whose glory he was truly seeking. He did not trust God, but he trusted in himself. that he was righteous. Number five, same text. The Pharisees despised others. You know, that's how Jesus introduces this little story there in verse 9. He was going to deliver it about those who trusted in themselves and despised others. The two go hand in hand. If you trust in yourself, you'll despise other people. If you despise other people, it's because you trust in yourself. Luke 18 showed that the Pharisees' love of self prevented his love of others. He thought that only certain people were worthy of his love, but he failed to understand the nature of love. Love is for people who need it. People who do not have love, who are not loved, who may be unlovable, they're the ones who need the love. A full gas tank doesn't need gas. An empty one does. And this is what the Pharisees did not understand about religion. Love is for people who need it, such as the sinner or the tax collector, back there in Luke 18. Luke 5 shows the Pharisees questioning how Jesus could associate with tax collectors and sinners. Because the Pharisee saw religion as a way of parading self, not helping others. Religion is about me parading myself, showing other people how righteous I am, not for helping people who are despicable. That's not what it's about. At least that's the way he thought. Luke 5 and verse 30. And their scribes and the Pharisees complained against his disciples, saying, "Why do you eat and drink with tax collectors and sinners?" Well, because they're sick and they need a physician. Number six. The Pharisees told leaders what their followers ought to do. Jesus, we're here to tell you how to deal with your followers. Or Pilate. Or someone else. We're here to tell you how you should be dealing with other people. John 19 shows that the Pharisees were never content, but always complaining that others were not doing the job properly. Or not doing it at all. At least what they expected to be done. Listen to John 19, starting at verse 19. Now Pilate wrote a title and put it on the cross. And the writing was, "Jesus of Nazareth, the King of the Jews." Then many of the Jews read this title, for the place where Jesus was crucified was near the city. And it was written in Greek, Hebrew, and Latin. Therefore, the chief priests of the Jews said to Pilate, "Do not write, 'The King of the Jews,' but 'He said, I am the King of the Jews.'" Pilate answered, for once, Pilate had some fortitude and stood up to them and said, "What I have written, I have written." This shows that they were never satisfied with how a job was done. But they always had a complaint. They objected to what Jesus had written over, to what Pilate had written over the cross. Could not the Pharisees be content that the man they hated was being crucified, tortured to death, right there before their very eyes, at the very moment they're complaining? No, that wasn't good enough. If you stabbed a Pharisee with a knife, he'd say, "Hey, is that thing rusty?" They'd find something to complain about. They still had to be busy telling others what they ought to do. Luke 19 again shows them bossing others around. The Pharisees thought that they knew the right thing to do in every circumstance. Therefore, when they didn't see what they thought ought to be done, they complained and ordered people to make it right. So in Luke 19:39 it says, "And some of the Pharisees called to him from the crowd, 'Teacher, rebuke your disciples. They're out of hand. Make them do what they need to do.'" Finally, number seven, finally for tonight. The Pharisees had some good. Not everything about the Pharisee was vile. They were not disobedient in all things pertaining to God. There were some good things that they did. They believed some truth. And Paul, in Acts 23, used this to his advantage. Here he has been brought before the Jewish leaders, who are united at this point against him. But being a former Pharisee, he's looking at them and he says, "Hey, I know these guys. Some of them are Pharisees and some of them are Sadducees." So he knew how he could get them against each other rather than against him. And watch what he does. Acts 23, beginning at verse 6. "But when Paul perceived that one part were Sadducees and the other Pharisees, he cried out in the council, 'Men and brethren, I am a Pharisee, the son of a Pharisee. Concerning the hope and resurrection of the dead, I am being judged.'" Well, he was not still a practicing Pharisee, but he was a Pharisee in the sense that he believed in the resurrection, because the Pharisees were strong on that point. So he says, "Hey, I have agreement with those guys on that," and we would too. We could say, "Hey, when it comes to the resurrection, I'm a Pharisee." Now watch verse 7. "And when he had said this, a dissension arose between the Pharisees and the Sadducees, and the assembly was divided." And here's why. "For the Sadducees say that there is no resurrection and no angel or spirit. But the Pharisees confess both." So it was good that the Pharisees believed in the possibility of a resurrection. It was good that the Pharisees acknowledged the fact that there are angels and that there are spirits. The Pharisees had another sign of goodness in them. They had the ability to show a measure of caring. They could show to a certain degree that they cared. And one place to find this is in Luke chapter 13, verse 31. And listen to what Luke says here in Luke 13, 31. "On that very day, some Pharisees came, saying to him, 'Get out and depart from here, for Herod wants to kill you.'" So, you know, they could say, "Jesus, we stood up for you. Jesus, we tried to help you. Jesus, we were not 100% against you. In fact, Jesus, you owe us one." You may also remember that some of the Pharisees invited Jesus into their homes for meals. Some of his well-known teachings took place in the homes of Pharisees. And there were also some honest Pharisees. What about Nicodemus? He's mentioned three times in the Gospel according to John. And each time it seems like he's growing stronger in his faith. He was the one who approached Jesus in John chapter 3 saying, "You know, we know you're a teacher come from God because no one can do these signs that you're doing unless he's from God." So he saw the signs that the other Pharisees requested, and he said, "This man has to be from God." Later, when the other Pharisees had gathered together to find out how to condemn Jesus, it was Nicodemus who stood up and said, "You know, does our law keep us from hearing a man? You know, we're accusing him, but shouldn't we be hearing from him what he has to say?" And it was Nicodemus who was one of the few people who took part in taking Jesus off the cross, bringing spices and other things, and burying him. A Pharisee. How about Gamaliel? In Acts chapter 5, he actually, you could say, stood up for the apostles. and prevented the other Pharisees from perhaps killing the apostles with their bare hands. And then, of course, outside of Jesus himself, what man did the most to promote Christianity? He was known as Saul of Tarsus, but we know him as Paul. Paul was a Pharisee. And not just in the way that he mentioned in Acts 23. Before he was converted, he was a full-fledged, willing to do anything for Israel Pharisee. But he was honest. So that when the truth slapped him upside the face and literally knocked him on the ground, he recognized it and he was willing to make a radical change in his life. Brethren, please keep thinking on the nature of the Pharisees. I'd encourage you to read all four Gospels. I know I'm always telling you to read something in the Bible, but that can't be a bad idea, especially coming from a preacher, can it? But read the Gospels constantly. And whenever you come to something about the Pharisees, just look and see what's going on there. Because remember, I've already shown you, Jesus warned his apostles, his very apostles who spent 3.5 years with him, he warned them about becoming Pharisees. Because if they were not careful, they themselves could be Pharisaic. And I think if that warning applied to them, it applies to us too. And sometimes, you know what? We are Pharisaic. And that's dangerous. The Pharisees were the conservatives of the first century. And the Sadducees were the liberals. And no one wants to be a liberal. You know, have you noticed that? It always seems like in religious or political circles, everyone backs away from wanting to be known as a liberal. And so sometimes, even us as Christians, we think, well, I don't mind erring towards the side of Phariseeism, just as long as I'm not a liberal. But listen, do you realize what a problem that is? Remember the first scripture, how I began this series, Matthew 5:20. Jesus said that unless our righteousness exceeds the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees, we will not enter into the kingdom of heaven. Don't err towards the side of the Pharisees or the side of the Sadducees. Hit the target. The one target that we should be hitting, and that's Jesus. Seek to be like Jesus with all your heart. And let us help you. And then you help us. Let's pray for each other. Let's talk with each other. Let's have Bible studies together. Can we help you tonight? If so, please come forward now as we stand and sing.